Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your Carolina Panthers.
Hey, yeah, relax. Yeah, take a deep breath.
Oh yeah, I'm hot.
If you really upset, bomb on me so I can go inside. Okay. You got me?
Yeah.
Like, loosen a tooth.
Yeah.
Okay?
No.
I won't press no charges. You can play the whole season. No game suspension, none of that.
All right? Yeah.
I may even give you some money. All right? I just want to make you laugh. Okay?
Cat scratch fever.
There's nothing here, baby.
Cat scratch fever.
I can't quit now. Yeah, I keep my focus, man. I keep my focus. We're going to find out how far we can push ourselves.
Welcome to another episode of Cat Scratch Radio. This is Jackson. I'll be your host for the next hour. We're here to talk Carolina Panthers football and certainly have lots to be excited about, lots of good positive news or, I guess, game results. I mean, what the hell? We won a playoff game. Ron Rivera is off the snide. Cam Newton is off the snide. Got a playoff win under their belt. Certainly one we expected to win, but it was still tough. Hard fought 27-16 game victory over the Cardinals. Hats off to Jonathan Stewart, Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, of course Cam Newton, all had big games. The game wasn't without its flaws, and we'll certainly be talking about that. Next up, though, is the Seattle Seahawks. And that's going to be a challenge. Defending champ, 11-point favorites. I just can't believe that. I try not to bet on the Panthers because I always jinx them. But my word, if they can't cover 11 points on a team that, when you look back at that Week 8 game, again, it was in Charlotte. And I know the Seahawks struggle on the East Coast. But... I don't see them hanging a lot of points on this defense next Saturday night. So, that said, I just feel like the Panthers are due. You know, I just have a feeling we're going to win this game. And it just, to me, and it has more to do with how we've been playing recently on why I think we're going to win this game, and it's not my – and again, I'm saying this not as a typical homer, though I can certainly homer it up with the best of them. It just really is a feeling that, A, we've been playing very well, 1-5 in a row, and again, I know they like to bash the competition, but some of those teams are playing really well, and also the defense is playing like it was playing last year at its high point. So that's another – reason why I feel good about it. And I lost my train of thought here on where I was my last point. I'll tell you what, let me get Canadian Panther in here. I see Newer's on the line. Let me get your mic on.
Good evening. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good.
So how are you feeling about the Seahawks game?
I'm pretty confident. I like their chances simply because I've said this. These are two really similarly built teams with two similar philosophies. It's basically run the ball and play really good defense. Now, obviously, the Seahawks do those two things a lot better than the Panthers, but we've played them close the past 3 years. So I like our chances in this one. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I definitely like this matchup a lot more than against the Green Bay Packers. I don't think we match up well against the Packers at all. But the Seahawks, I think we do match up pretty well against them.
Yeah. They're not a great passing team. They're more of a dink and dunk, rolling Russell Wilson out, and his legs are dangerous. So That's the part that worries me. And I remember the third reason why I feel good about this game is that we played well on the road recently. I mean, we won in New Orleans. We won in Atlanta. You know, those are games that there are places that we typically don't play well. So, you know, I think Cam Newton's car accident kind of has given him a sense of urgency, you know. And then, hell, the fifth thing is, we finally found some key cogs. We got, as I put up a post, we got five new starters, maybe, you know, might even be six this Saturday night. And it's not just that they're new, it's that they're improvements from what we had when we played the Seahawks in Week 8. You know, with most importantly, Mike Tolbert, I think, is going to be a huge addition on Saturday night. You know, that part, I'm really excited to see what the offense is able to do. I think Mike Shula has finally figured out he's certainly gotten better at game planning and preparing his team for his game plan. Certainly gotten some concerns, and we'll get to those. Let me look around here. I see I got BW on the Smith. BW on the Smith.
BW on the Smith.
Dang, I got a lot of people on the line. Y'all just gonna have to hold on for a little while. We're gonna talk it out here, B-Dub. So you wanna jump back to the Cardinals game, or you wanna keep talking about the Seahawks?
Whatever you wanna do. I mean, we got an hour to kill. We can talk about both. So
yeah,
either way is fine with me.
Oh shoot! And I forgot, guys. I have not opened the chat. If anyone is out there for that, let me do that. But well, we were talking Seahawks. 11-point dogs. I mean, people are expecting us to get crushed by the Seahawks. Are you feeling that?
No, there's no way that stays 11 points. I don't buy that at all. I think the line will move a little bit closer to a touchdown before kickoff. I mean, you got to get – it's Tuesday. It's not the same line on Tuesday as it is on Friday and Saturday. I think they'll move it closer to 7. Because the teams are closer than the records show that they are. We match up very well with Seattle.
Yeah. I totally agree, and I think we will see that line move in. So I may go ahead and take it while it's 10 or 11.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to gamble on this game, I would take the points, because there is – it's a very unlikely chance that Seattle wins by more than 11 points.
Yeah. Sorry, my damn dog. Yeah, 11 seems high. I think it's crazy. But, you know, will it get all the way back down to 7? They usually don't move that much. So I could see something like a 9.
Well, Arizona and Carolina moved 3 points. So
did it?
It started 3.5. It ended up 6.5. So. Of course, that was a completely different situation. It wasn't the defending Super Bowl champions in their home stadium.
Who was that?
That was me. That was an echo.
Oh, okay. So, I don't know. I got Noor on the line. Anything to add to that, Noor?
Yeah, I think the line is going to come down as well. This is just really early right now. I mean, I think there are two possibilities. I don't think the Panthers are going to win, but I think it's going to be a close game. Either it's going to be a really close game that comes down to the wire, or if they mess up somewhere in the third or fourth quarter and they have an interception or another special teams mistake, that's when I think the game could possibly turn into a blowout. But overall, I think it'll be a close game.
I agree. I think it's going to be close. Nothing will surprise me, though. I mean, it could easily be 35-3, but it could also be 10-9 or 10-7. I mean, it could go either way.
I mean, I don't think anybody was expecting.
We need to put up about 20 points on them at least.
Basically, the formula is simple. If we want to beat Seattle, we have to. The defense has to play the exact same way that they played against Arizona, and the offense has to play the exact opposite that they did against Arizona. That's the only way that Carolina is going to win the game.
Yeah, I was watching the first half of that last night, a replay, and man, we missed Cam missed Ed Dixon twice for big games.
One of them you can't really put on Cam. One of them hit off of Ed Dixon's hands. So there was one though.
There was one where he was on a wheel pattern and he missed him, and then the one where he was just straight in a seam and he threw it over his head when we were down, I think, on that first drive. But I don't know. I'm a little apprehensive about it. Of course, it's going to be a huge game and a lot of fun to watch. You know, the key is if the Panthers can get a lead and versus getting down by two scores, you know, they'll take it into the fourth quarter.
If the game stays close into the fourth quarter, that's a win for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, the Seattle game was the one game I went to this season. I didn't end up writing, you know, I never did actually watch a replay of it. I forgot to tape it. So I was, you know, going back through it, and one of the things I noticed that just scared me and is Brenson Burson muffed a punt during that game, but Josh Norman recovered it, thank God. I think if there's one player that scares me the most right now is Burson. This damn punt cover, you know, punt returns, just catching the ball.
Yeah, I'm going to defend him a little bit. I've been kind of hard
Please
on
do.
Him, saying he was a tour guide and all this stuff. one, the weather was terrible on Saturday night. It was wet. It was rainy. It was foggy. It wasn't a good day. Two, no one, especially Brenton Burson, but no one expected Drew Butler to be as bad as he was punting the ball for Arizona. We could talk about how all of you wanted to draft him instead of Brad Nortman. But we won't really get into that because you don't want to listen to me boast about how I was right and you were wrong. But that's beside the point. Drew Butler was probably the worst punter, at least one game performance. That was the worst punting I've ever seen. And I think they could have probably put a lineman out there, and he could have probably punted it better than Drew Butler was punting it. I mean, I think his longest punt was like 50 yards, but that's the one that they let go, and it rolled about 15 yards after it hit the ground. You know, it just – they were wobbly. They were low. They were coming in at weird angles. They were only 30 yards. He had to run up and grab them. I think a lot of the problem was the crappy punting more than it was Brenton Burson. Now, if he muffs one Saturday, you have to take him out and put somebody else in there because Seattle's punter is actually pretty good.
Yeah. Well.
But it just goes to show you how important a punter is. I know a lot of people like to give me crap about it, but that game proves how important punting is because Carolina's average field position was Arizona's 40. You don't lose very often when you get that kind of field position.
This is true. I mean, the guy was terrible.
Despite that, they only scored 27 points. I'm amazed.
Well, they gave away 14.
Yeah.
Because Burson muffed the one punt, and then Cam threw the interception. The game.
Well,
they
gave away
40.
All 16. I mean, the
safety
was a giveaway.
Yeah, the safety was an intentional giveaway, which wouldn't have happened if they didn't give up the other 14. I mean, it could have been anywhere from 41 to nothing to 41 to 6, because I don't think that Arizona could have scored more than two field goals had we not had those two turnovers.
Yeah.
Their offense was that terrible.
And, you know, I know in that last week, Smoke Wagon is in the chat. He's probably on the line, too. But he called a shutout, and it didn't happen, but it sure could have happened.
Well, it should have happened.
It should have happened, right?
Because when Burson muffed the punt, they started on the, 24, 25-yard line, somewhere around there. They were practically in the red zone when that happened. And then the interception put them in the red zone, too. So, I mean, it's kind of hard not to score when you get that kind of gimme.
I mean, yardage.
Yeah.
Yep. Ah, Goose Creek's on the line.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, man. So, you excited?
I am.
Were you at that game?
No, I wasn't. I was in North Carolina, but I was visiting my mom.
Well, apparently James Dater went, and I didn't even know it until afterwards when he wrote up the post about it.
I knew because he asked me to run the Twitter account. That's the only reason I knew. But
you know, yeah. I wonder if you don't even like if you didn't have tickets to the game and you just tailgated and watched it. Don't they let you in like after into the fourth quarter? Can't anybody go in there? Or even maybe after the game. I would like to have been there for the lap around the stadium, but you could tell it was a while after the game because the stands are pretty much empty except for the people down along the bottom. I think that'd be pretty cool. I like the tradition. What do y'all think of that?
I thought it was neat. I mean, I'm sure there are some people out there who think that Cam Newton will never understand what it takes to be an NFL quarterback, and he's immature, and he doesn't know how to handle his business and this, that, and the other, because people are predisposed to hate Cam Newton. But I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a little fun to see some of the clips of that. Good way to give back.
I thought it was pretty telling to watch Luke Kuechly go around the field and fight his way around some of that staging to get to some of the fans over in a corner. You know, he was making sure everybody got a piece. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, we got all kinds of stars on the phone tonight. We got Jeff Maxwell.
Gentlemen, how are you tonight?
What's up, man?
How y'all guys doing?
Good. You're the fantasy guy, right?
Yeah, somewhat.
FF companion?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, took a little beating this year, though.
Anybody worth taking in the Panthers-Seattle game for a FanDuel lineup? Maybe Marshawn?
Yeah, there's I think they're going to shut him down, basically.
I agree.
I don't see him going beast mode on this defense.
I don't either, man. I think Cam might be a good play this Saturday, but otherwise, I might just avoid that game altogether in my lineup.
If you're
going to
take anyone, I would take a defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either defense, probably.
Either defense would be the only one I would take, unless you want to take Russell Wilson. I mean, he's always going to, you know, he's put up something worthwhile. I don't know if he would be better than the other quarterbacks that are going to play this weekend, but he's going to get his.
Yeah, you got to think the other division games are going to be a lot more scoring than the Panthers and the Seahawks. That's going to be close and tight. And probably a low-scoring affair. Hard to justify anybody from this game.
So who's Josh Norman going to cover? I mean, is Paul Richardson even a number two yet? So they just got the the Baldwin kid right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so
right?
Doug Baldwin would probably be the number one. That'd probably be who Josh Norman covers.
Yeah, I think it'll be a zone just so that they can, just so that everybody can keep their eyes on Russell Wilson in case he decides to break free. So I think Ben Wickery and Norman are both going to stay in a zone coverage this time. I don't think we're going to see as much man coverage. So I don't really think Norman's really going to be traveling one-on-one against any receiver. I think they're just going to tell him either line up on the left or right side and just sit back in your zone. That's what I think. I'd be surprised if they let them play in man coverage against Wilson because he will beat them.
And CP, let me ask you this too, from that Seattle game, and again, because I went and I never really watched the game on tape, the touchdown, the game-winning touchdown there at the last 2 minutes to Luke Wilson, was that a blown coverage on the safety or was it a linebacker coverage?
I think it was really good baseline, and I think Boston was a little bit late getting there. It was really good play design, though, because Roman Harper was actually the single high free safety on that play. And I don't know why that was the case, but Boston was basically matched up on Wilson, and Harper was a little bit late getting over there. Same with Boston, who was a little bit outmatched in one-on-one. So it was a mix of both. I'd say a bit of a blown coverage because Harper didn't get there quickly enough, and it was also a really good play design. Because they saw Harper was the single high. They were going to exploit that. And they also saw Boston as a rookie in his first game. They wanted to exploit that as well. It was really close, though. A couple inches, that's all.
Yep. Yeah, that was a fun game up until that moment.
Boston made a critical mistake on that play. On four verts, you never let a guy inside of you, and he let Wilson cross his face.
Who was that?
And Trey Boston let Wilson cross his face right off the four verts, and for some god unknown reason, Harper was 4 yards deep in the damn end zone. I don't know what he thought he was going to do back there. By the time Wilson caught the ball and he ran up, he hit him on the half-yard line.
I mean, there's actually a good video explanation of what exactly happened. I'm going to look for it on YouTube. It's one of the Seattle radio guys. He does, like, X's and O's talks. I remember linking it on CSR as well. I'll see if I can find it. I'll try and get that.
Yeah, I was a little depressed after that one. got drunk in Charlotte.
Right now.
But see, that's the story of Carolina-Seattle over the last 3 years. We play them very well. We match up perfectly. It's a slugfest. It's a one-score game. And then in the fourth quarter, Carolina makes that one critical, fatal mistake. Seattle takes advantage of it and stabs us in the heart and wins the game. It was the D'Angelo Williams fumble. That tight end touchdown.
Luke Wilson,
I mean, it's just the same thing. It's almost like it's a movie, and we've been watching it on repeat every single time. One critical play is what determines the winner and the loser at the last three times we've played them. But the one key difference, and a lot of fans are saying, you know, well, we play them very well. We play them close. We can beat them. They're beatable, yada, yada, yada. And all that's true. We haven't played them in Seattle yet. We've played them at home. They are a completely different football team when they're at home versus on the road. That crowd, they really can call themselves the 12th man because the crowd noise is unbelievably loud there. Yes, it gets like that in a lot of stadiums, like in the Superdome or in the Georgia Dome, but it doesn't really compare to the atmosphere they're going to see in Seattle in a playoff game when they're the underdogs that nobody expects to win. So it's going to be different than it has been.
Yeah. Not if Cam comes out and silences them right off the bat.
That's what they need to do.
I'm serious. You know, Rivera's been, last year, he liked to defer and put his defense on the field first. He hasn't been doing that this year, and if he wins the toss, he needs to take the ball
take the ball, score a touchdown, and get the crowd out of the game early. That is a very important key.
Yep. What do you guys?
It's not only
other guys. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, it's not only just the crowd. I think you need to take a quick lead against the Seahawks and really take them away from what their identity is, which is to run the ball, let Wilson set up play action or bootlegs. You have to force them into passing situations, force him to make throws with his arm. And I think the only way to do that is if you take a quick 10-0 or 14-0 against them.
Yeah, you've got to put them in a situation where they can't do what Carolina does, which is bleed the clock with the running game, set up play action, and take off half an hour of game time while you sit on the other side wondering when you're going to get the ball back. You can't let Seattle do that.
Well, we got to stop Lynch, obviously. Got to stop the running game, or they'll just run all over us. Like, that's what they're used to doing.
Well, strangely enough, we've had success against Marshawn Lynch.
Uh-huh.
You would think
yeah.
that Marshawn would run rampant all over us, but we've stopped him pretty much every time we've played.
Yeah.
The one thing our defensive front matches up well against is the outside zone running game, and that's really what Seattle runs. There's this huge misconception that Seattle are a power running team. They're actually not. They're really more of a finesse offensive line, and although Marshawn Lynch himself is a powerful runner, a lot of their schemes involve simply just getting their offensive linemen out in space. When that happens, the most important thing is you need to have your defensive tackles penetrate. And luckily for us, we have Star Latulele and Kawan Short, and they played pretty good games the last two times we've played the Seahawks. I thought they've done a pretty good job penetrating against those outside zone runs.
Yeah. I agree with that. Let's see.
Ivan's on hold if you want to let him talk.
I hadn't gotten down to his number yet. Ah, there he is. I've been, wait. It must be this one here. Is he a 910? Is this Ivan?
He's a 919-221.
Ah, I didn't recognize that number. What's up, Ivan?
Nothing much, guys. Nothing much.
So, we've been talking Seahawks. You want to stay on that? We haven't talked about the house fire yet. I don't know if there's much there, anything to discuss, but I guess just lucky.
I mean, I was just going to kind of piggyback off of what BW said, because I was looking at the results from the last three times we played Seattle and Carolina, and all three of those losses, we lost by 5 points or less in each one of those. And the last time we played in Seattle was back in 2010, of course, the year we all want to forget. But
I remember that game. That was the game that Jason Baker saved a touchdown by the swooping shoestring tackle of Leon Washington.
Yeah. Now, that was the last time we played there, and we lost 31-14. And then the time before that, we lost 34-14 in the championship game in 06. So,
well, we can't really use those as comparisons, though. So
I'm just saying. Yeah, I'm just saying. Looking back at playing there, though, it's a far different thing than playing here at home. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people, you know, who want to homer the game and say, well, yeah, we're going to win by, you know, this or that, or, you know, they're really not taking us seriously. It's a hell of a lot harder to play in Seattle than it is here. I mean, I would give us a chance to win if we were playing here, but I as much as I want to say we win, I can't really see it. I mean, honestly, I'm just proud of the team for making it this far and the fact that we finally won a playoff game at home. And, you know, anything else to me is just icing on the cake from here on out. But it just seems just difficult to win in Seattle, given the fact that they haven't lost a playoff game there, and I don't know how long. So,
yeah, the common feeling is that we're playing with house money, and we really are. I mean, after we got beat by Minnesota, we were 4-8-1 or 3-8-1. Nobody expected us to do anything. I mean, we were talking about who we were going to pick fourth in the draft at that point. And, you know, then we went on the run. We win the division. That's great. First team to ever do it back-to-back. But then we actually won a playoff game. I mean, that's something we haven't done since, what, 2005 was the last time we won a playoff game? And, you know, we got revenge on Arizona because that's the team that gave us nightmares in 2009 and effectively ended Jake Delhomme's career. So we were able to do that. We were able to set a record for best defensive effort by giving up the fewest yards ever in a playoff game. You know, I don't really care, quote unquote, if we win or not on Saturday. I am happy with what happened after we got beat by Minnesota. After that, it's been positive results.
Yep.
Nobody thinks we deserve to be in the game anyway. Nobody thinks we deserve to win, so there's really no shame in going to Seattle and getting beat.
But even if we were 11-5, going to Seattle and losing is nothing.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's nothing to be ashamed of, unless we go up there and get beat 56-0 or something stupid like that. But as long as we play our game, we don't make any stupid mistakes, we have a chance, and that's more than any of us thought 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the Seattle offense over the course of the year, they're consistent in the 20 to 30, 32-point range. So I don't see them blowing out anybody. That's why it confuses me as why they're giving 11 points. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be really close.
Yeah, I agree. I don't understand the opening line either. And I don't know if you were on the line when we talked about that when I first got on. It's going to go down. I'm not a Vegas expert. I'm not a gambler because I always lose. But I don't see that line staying there. I don't know why they opened it at 11. It doesn't make much sense to me. It seems like they'd opened it at something like 8, and then they could have adjusted it up or down accordingly. But it's just, you know, one more thing to pile onto the bulletin board. Because I don't know if any of you have looked on Twitter, on Facebook, on other things. The defense especially have taken it personal that the line opened at 11.5.
Oh, I'm sure.
There's quotes from Josh Norman and Thomas Davis in particular. They're not very happy about it.
Yeah. I mean, they must be thinking, like, we're not even going to give up 11 points.
Exactly.
Yeah, really.
Oh,
unless the odd makers are thinking 14-3, I don't see it.
It honestly, the only way I see this being an 11-point spread is if it's 14-3 or 17-6. Those are the only two scores that I see an 11-point swing, because I honestly think the score is going to be 9-7 or 12-9. You know, 17-14, something like that. It's going to be close. It's going to be less than a touchdown. And just think, we might do the unthinkable and win.
It's not out of the realm of possibility, for sure.
And then we have to hold our noses and root for Dallas so we don't have to go to Lambeau.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but do we really want to do that? Because we're liable to go there and then have the referees win the game again for Dallas in Dallas.
Yeah, but then we could still say we went to the NFC Championship game and got screwed over. You know,
I just don't want to see Jerry Jones get happy. I can't stomach that.
Oh. So anybody looked at the heard about the weather, what that's going to be? I mean, Seattle's usually kind of dreary, isn't it?
It's supposed to be kind of like what it was against Arizona. It's supposed to be in the low 50s, high 40s, low 50s with chances of rain. It's Seattle, Washington. It rains every day in Seattle, Washington. So the only difference would be the humidity.
I'm just curious, how cold it's going to be. Yeah.
It says 49 and cloudy, 20% chance of rain on weather.com.
Okay.
Good football weather right there.
That is good football. I mean, yeah, it's not too cold. Because if there's one thing we know we do better than them is pass the football. And so I just didn't want the conditions to hinder us in that regard. So, yeah, I'm seeing high of 49. So it'll probably be between, mid-40s by the time. Of course, that's, 8:30 here. So what, 5:30 there?
Yeah, it's 3 hours behind. So it'll be 5 o'clock there.
Just dark. Just getting dark. Okay. Yeah, sunset at 4:37. I pulled it up on the weather. Ain't that
weird?
So
that's, the time shouldn't really be a factor for the Panthers because they played last Saturday at 4 o'clock, and it was cloudy and overcast and rainy. So it's going to be basically the same conditions as it was last week.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing about that, when the game ends, it's going to be like body time. It's going to be like almost midnight.
That's true.
We're flying to the West Coast.
I'll be shit-faced by then if we win.
Yeah. I might even be happy if we win.
What? Even CW can be happy with a...
If we win, you need to have a drunken scratch radio.
Yeah,
celebration.
If a team that was 3-8-1 ends up going to the NFC Championship game, that is the greatest thing ever. It doesn't even have to be my team. Any team that goes from 3-8-1 to the NFC or AFC Championship game, I automatically support that because that is cool.
I'm with you, too.
Well, if they get to the championship game, they can't have a losing season.
That's true.
Might not be winning, but it won't be losing.
Would you call 9-9-1?
Well, that's right. We're actually 8-8-1 right now, huh?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, by then, we could be 10-8-1 in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Super Bowl.
That's the only way they can get a winning season for sure is go to the Super Bowl. And people will be upset because it'll ruin their draft pick.
Don't get me started on that. I'll tell you what, that
I started to say something.
Nuts.
I started to put something out on that, and I actually did a little parody on my cousin Vinny. Just because I wanted to put out the stuff about the draft pick falling down and how people are getting upset. I put it in at the end. But I thought it was interesting. We're at 25 is the worst we can get right now. I mean, we're at 25. And every time we win, we go up 4. Then we go to 29. And then we go up to 31 or 32.
Yep. Yeah, the only three options or four options we got left are 25, 29, 31, and 32.
Right.
There are going to be good players at those four draft picks. I know that a top 10 pick is great. Personally, I wish we had a top 10 pick every year without the losing. It'd be nice if it worked that way. But the thing about it is winning the division 2 years in a row and then winning a home playoff game – then going to Seattle, arguably the toughest place to play in the entire NFL, and playing them close to where we could have a shot to win or even maybe winning is more important than 10 to 15 slots in the draft order. because what you're doing is you're teaching these young kids like Trey Boston and Josh Norman and Ben Wickery and even Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin and Fozzie Whitaker and Jonathan Stewart. You're teaching these guys that you can win. You're instilling a winning culture in a franchise that has never really had one. And to me, that's more important than getting 10 slots higher in the draft.
Hear, hear.
And if we're sitting at 29, to be honest with you, I would not be adverse to trading back just a little bit.
I wouldn't either. Trade out of the first round and get another pick.
And for some team that's looking to get a quarterback and wanting to get that extra option year on him.
Exactly.
Just like they did with Minnesota last year.
Yeah.
Bridgewater, yep.
Yeah, there's going to be quarterbacks that are worth picking at 28 and 29. I mean, you're going to have guys like the guy from Baylor.
Bryce Petty.
Bryce Petty, yeah. He's worth picking at 28. He's worth trading up to the end of the first round to get. He's just not worth taking at 10, at least in my opinion.
Right.
You know, but it would benefit us to have two second-rounders over the 28th pick or the 29th pick. And I would be fine with that. We've seen what Dave Gettleman can do when he has draft picks. You know, we picked 28th last year. This is pretty much the best draft class we've ever had. You can make arguments for a couple of other ones, but every single player we drafted except Tyler Gaffney is contributing.
Yeah.
And we ended up better with Fozzie.
We ended up being better off with Fozzie than we would have been with Gaffney. I mean, that even turned out to work out better. But, you know.
Don't forget Andrew Norwell and Philly Brown is undrafted.
And yes, the undrafted free agents as well. Dave Gettleman did some work with those.
And Foucault, even though he's raw,
he's going to be good. Yeah, he's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. I love Fozzie Whitaker. I can't believe he was – available. That just freaks me out. The guy that good. Shoot, we can let D Will go in a heartbeat. I mean, love the guy, but shoot,
that's
him
pretty
and Stewart,
much what's going to happen.
Those are two. Yeah. Oh yeah.
And you know, Dave Gettleman came out smelling like a rose with the Ben Wickery thing, because there were people that were really upset about him trading away that pick.
I was.
Yep.
I won't lie. I was very upset about it. And I mean, when me and TMG did our draft debate, I called him Ben Wikipedia to make fun of him, because I thought it was the stupidest pick, or one of the stupidest picks, because of what we traded to get him. And I'll be damned if he didn't prove me wrong. I mean, where would we be right now if we didn't have Ben Wickery back there? You know, we would still have Kaysen back there.
Oh, God.
We would be watching the playoffs without the Panthers in it, if we wouldn't have made that pick.
We'd have the number 8 pick.
We'd have the number 8 pick. That's exactly right.
And where did Kaysen in? Kaysen's playing for the Ravens, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. He actually got on the field. Yeah, I think I'll be taking some Tom Brady. in FanDuel. He's going to toast Kaysen. If he's in there.
I think you can put air quotes around playing when it comes to Kaysen.
Yeah. He's on the team.
Let's see. We got a couple more regulars out here. Smoke Wagon has been patient. What's up, Smoke?
What's up, man?
You were close on the shutout. It should have happened.
Yeah, it should have happened. B.W. was right last week. I mean, I said it'd be a shutdown. He said the only way they wouldn't have one was, you know, botch stuff like on special teams and stuff, and that's what happened. If they didn't botch nothing, Arizona wouldn't have crossed the 50-yard line.
Yeah, that's true. It would look like that Alabama-LSU game a couple of years ago where LSU didn't even cross midfield until the middle of the fourth quarter. I mean, that's pretty much what it was.
But, I want to touch base on something real quick. When y'all was talking about the betting and stuff and these spreads, Vegas right now is a 10.5 spread, 10.5, and Vegas implied scores, final scores, this is how Vegas gets their spread, is with their implied score. They have Seattle scoring 25.2 points and Carolina scoring 14.8 in the matchup this Saturday. That's how they got the spread. It started at 11. It's down to 10.5 right now.
So it's down to 10.5, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
10.5, but that's splitting hairs. But what I find strange is there's something going on here. I mean, if this is for the betting folks, you know, if you look at the offensive stat comparison and the deep, this is out of Vegas, you know, where all the numbers guys are. If you look at all offensive stat comparison for the season, their percentages, and the defensive stat comparison as far as opponent's yards per play, opponent's points per play, so on and so forth. Our stats, right beside Seattle's stats, were dead even by only like a point different. So now, if we're that evenly matched, and they're giving it, there's something going on. And I'm willing to bet Vegas is making this line like it is, and Vegas is putting their money on Carolina and letting the general public put their money on Seattle. Because Vegas thinks Carolina's actually good. Vegas thinks Carolina's actually going to win.
Stats don't take into account the turnovers and the stupid things that happen.
Yeah, and the other thing is Vegas doesn't...
Seattle won't do stupid things.
Yeah, Vegas doesn't set the line based on how they think the game is going to be. They set the line based on how they think people are going to gamble their money.
How the money is coming in.
And they set their line based on how they can make the most money from stupid people who say, oh, I'm going to throw $10,000 on Seattle because they're going to win by more than 11 points. Because Carolina went 7-8-1. That's the people Vegas are hoping to sucker in.
And who's Vegas going to bet on?
Vegas is going to bet on the sure thing, which they know that's a terrible bet. And they know that if you want to win any money, you take the points. Because there's no way that it's going to be an 11.5 spread. Carolina's going to cover that easily.
Well, I mean, this is homerism. Carolina's going to only let them score 3 points Saturday, guys. Carolina's going to go in there, and they are going to run roughshod on Seattle Saturday.
You think?
Yeah.
That's not homerism at all, Smoke.
Let's see this.
I mean, it's possible. I'm not going to call you crazy like I did last week, but it's possible. but I don't think it's going to happen.
Seattle's due a bad loss. They just do a bad loss. Either at home or on the road, this is just going to be at home. They do a bad loss. They got a lot of pressure on them to repeat. They got a lot of pressure on them to blow out Carolina because the pressure's on them, like you were saying on the social media. You know, Seattle's supposed to do this. Remember, when you're supposed to do something, more pressure's on you. I believe Carolina's going to go out there and they're going to smack them in the ground. I think Carolina wins that game. Actually, I think they're winning by 2 scores.
Ooh.
Wow.
I'm feeling it, too. I mean, and it's just for a lot of reasons. I think momentum is in our court. I think Seattle is going to – it's a trap game for them, that they are not going to be as ready mentally as they could be. I mean, it's tough to repeat. If they're not going to repeat, they're probably going to lose either to us or the next week. So –
And, Jackson, you put out a thread today. I didn't have a chance to comment on it, but I spoke about it last week on this show, and you kind of really just made a thread about it. This is a different team that's playing Seattle this time around. A lot of the personnel that was on the field back in the mid-year is not on it now, and there's other guys that are actually performing on the field. I think it's going to be a different animal.
Now, to be fair, and that was a great article by Jackson, but to be fair, Seattle is a different team too. They didn't have Bobby Wagner. They didn't have their starting fullback, which he weighs like 400 pounds.
Two of their top three defensive backs.
Yeah, two of their top three defensive backs weren't playing. I mean, I'm not saying that we don't stand a chance, don't get me wrong, but both teams are different than they were in Week 8. It's not just us.
Yeah. But, and I, you know, what I was trying to point out is, you know, a lot of teams might be starting a lot of different guys, but usually it's a downgrade in talent. For us, all those positions were upgrades.
That is true.
And I think I even missed one. I wanted to go back, but I don't think Kawan Short was starting back then, was he?
He may not have started, but he played enough to where it's negligible.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why I didn't put it. It's just really for the front four, they kind of rotate and get pretty even snaps.
Yeah.
Probably the guy that gets the most every week is Star.
You know who we're really going to miss this week, and I even said so in one of the threads, was we're going to miss Hardy this week. We're going to miss his pressure and setting the boundary over on that side, you know, the containment.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're going to start him or not, or play him or even give him a jersey, but Frank Alexander could mitigate that to some extent. But for whatever reason, he didn't dress against Arizona. I don't know.
That was strange. Anyone got a theory on that?
Well, I know that it was to give D'Angelo Williams a jersey. Even though D'Angelo Williams didn't hardly play at all, it was a courtesy to D'Angelo to give him a jersey. But why wasn't Wes Horton the one that sacrificed his spot?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, he's now starting over Addison.
Yeah, I didn't understand it.
Let's see.
Or maybe Frank Alexander
got shanked the line. 318-401. Is that Shank Diddy? Is Shank Diddy out there? I had a 318-401 that I had a question mark whether that was him or not. Shank Diddy, you on the line? No? All right. I'm sorry, BW. Keep going.
I was going to say the other theory is maybe Frank Alexander got popped for PEDs again.
I think it comes down to game shape. He was probably winded on the limited snaps he got the week before, and they decided to go with the guy was playing.
Probably not a bad call, really. I'd like to see him in there this week, though. They can just sit Williams back down for all I care. Between Tolbert, Stewart, and Fozzie, I think we're good.
We say that, but if we put him on the inactive list, we'll have a repeat of 2005 where we had the guy sitting in section 519 come in and play running back in the fourth quarter because everybody else got hurt.
Yeah, they'll go with four running backs for sure.
Maybe this is the week, this is the game that we run a trick play with Joe Webb. I would love that.
He showed some good speed last week running down that punt return.
Yeah.
I was really surprised he walked him down.
They ought to put him in every so often just to run a deep route just to set it up for that trick play later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. We also got – going to put one more person on the line before we get to the end of the show. I ran the recording up to 60 minutes, and we'll do some after party and all that. About 7 minutes, but I got Kaiser on the line. What's up, Kais? You there? You muted?
What's
up, man?
Man, ain't nothing, man. Congratulations to everybody on the win.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about Byron Bell. As much flack as I give Byron, he really got downfield and sprung Fozzie to get all the way in that end zone. So I'll give him that. The funniest thing, though, was Charles Johnson's speech before the game out there on the field. And he looked Byron Bell in the eyes, and he said, "Okay, Big Bell, get it right this week."
Yeah.
And I think
Did
I
he
think
really
that's
say
telling.
That?
Yeah, he looked. It's on the Panthers.com website. They showing all the different speeches of the huddles, and he looked Byron Bell dead in the face and said, "Okay, Big Bell, get it right this time." And funny. I think that's telling that people in the organization know that he's a problem. It can be a problem at times with Byron Bell. So I think when he ran down that field at 40 miles per hour, like I've never seen him do, he was thinking, I don't want to look Charles Johnson in the face if I don't go make this block. So I just thought that was funny. Another thing, guys, is I'm glad Ron Rivera had to watch the Dallas and Detroit game in order to see where we were going to play. Because I think he could learn something that Caldwell made about not going for it or having guts and doing what Jason Garrett did and by going for it on 4th-and-1 inside the close to goal line and 4th-and-7 rather than trying to punt it back and stop them again. It's the playoffs, you know, and as a visiting team like Detroit was and like will be, I think you have to take advantage of all opportunities. And if you have Cam Newton and D'Angelo, Jonathan Stewart, the way they're running, Mike Tolbert, and if you're at 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, there's no need in putting if you're in that great area of the field on your side where you're a little bit too far for Gano, but, you know, hey, come on. And so I hope he learned something from that because they can talk about the pickup flag in Detroit and everything, but at the end of the day, it was still 4th-and-1, and if you get it, the game is probably over because you can waste about 3 or 4 more minutes just on your downs alone.
Yep.
So,
he
was just out of field goal range. He decided to punt it, and the punter shanked it. It was like a 10-yard punt, right?
Yep.
Yes. Yep. And that's what happens. And we say it all the time. When you play not to lose, those things happen.
Exactly.
You know.
It's just like prevent defense. The only thing it prevents is you winning the game.
Exactly.
You know, it's pointless. When you have it in that situation, you go for it.
Well, I don't know whether it's just my perception or what, but is Gano having a worse year this year than he had last year, too?
It seems like it.
It does. It seems that way.
Yeah, he's missed
everything he's missed has been over 43 yards, though. I mean, you can't.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You can't fault the guy. I mean, he's not missing chip shots. He's missing some bombs.
Yeah.
And
true.
One last thing, guys. In the last 3 games, we have held Marshawn Lynch to 190 yards in all 3 games combined off of 52 carries. Jonathan Stewart actually ran pretty well this last game, but the problem was they were doing the read option, which was working. But Cam actually ran the ball 12 times in comparison to Jay Stew's 16 times. And Cam only averaged 2 yards a carry. Stew averaged almost 4.9. Cam's going to have to read a little bit better when to keep and when to hand off. We actually fumbled the ball because he waited too long at the last game. So that handoff or the read option can work against those guys, but Cam's going to have to do a little bit better on his read and not think that he has to do it all by himself and just give it to Jay Stew because he's really running like a monster right now.
Yeah, you know, about that, one thing that I don't – and somebody brought it up on one of the threads today on CSR. Cam needs to stop basically fighting with Stewart over who's going to carry the ball because it screws up the whole play and they don't have lanes anymore when they finally decide who's going to get it and they get tackled. At the very least, if you give it to Stewart, he's going to get back to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
But because they're both sitting there fighting, not literally fighting, but fighting over who's going to actually carry the ball, it screws everything up, and then it's a loss.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, guys, hold on 1 second. The recording's about to end. I just wanted to tell the guys in the chat that the audio may drop off for you. Appreciate you guys out there. Got a ton of people in the chat. If you can then dial in real quick, you can get in on the after party. And download later. A little bit later, and sorry guys, Mitch, and you're not on the recording, Tony, I'll open the lines up here shortly. And Bobby, I see you guys out there. All right, go ahead, man. Where were we?
We were probably about to say, fuck yeah, we beat the Cardinals.
We were talking about rushing and about handing Cam taking the ball from Stewart.
Yeah.
But, also, I was wondering, am I right? Did Cardinals only have one run more than 5 yards? That one in the red zone? That was the only one they had, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. They could not get the running game going at all. I mean, we shut their running game down on first down. And John Gruden pointed it out multiple times. If you can't establish the run on first down, you're not going to do very well. Especially when you have a third-string quarterback.
I don't know why they didn't bring Logan Thomas in more. They ran a read off play.
Logan Thomas has got to be the worst fucking quarterback in the history of organized football for him to not get any playing time except for that one snap in the fourth quarter. He's got to be garbage, shit pile, terrible for them to not at least put him in for a drive and see what might happen.
Yeah.
You know, anybody would have done.
I got Ed, Mitch Apple, Tony, and Bobby, you guys are on the line now. So carry on. I'm going to take a leak, and I'll be right back.
Is anybody here from Virginia Tech or a Virginia Tech fan that can enlighten me on why Logan Thomas didn't play? I mean, is he that damn terrible?
Well, he was named the starter and then pulled 2 days later, so something's bad wrong there.
Yeah, something's bad wrong.
But guys, you know, Arizona had 7 drives in the second half, and they got 12 yards. 7 offensive drives in a whole half of football, and they got 12 yards.
Well, to be fair to them, they lost 20 yards on the last play of the game.
Yeah, well...
So, I mean, it makes it a little bit better. They had 32
yards.
Yeah, they had 4 yards of drive until the last one. They lost 20 yards.
Officially, they lost 19. But
yeah, officially, they lost 19, yeah. So, you know, they got halfway to a first down. But, I mean, honestly, if you really think about it, it's 27-14. In the fourth quarter, the third quarter was probably the worst offensive output of any football team all year, and you still don't put in Logan Thomas? I mean,
nope. You
don't even just roll the dice. They could have run the Wildcat with Patrick Peterson, and it would have been better than what Lindley did in the third quarter.
It's got to be mental because, you know, he's got a better arm than Lindley.
Yeah, exactly. And what bothered me the most, more than anything else, why were we throwing the ball? Cam shouldn't have thrown another pass after we took the lead. Because, I mean, they couldn't stop Jonathan Stewart. They couldn't stop Fozzie Whitaker. They couldn't stop Cam when he ran it. And then Cam is just about to make it an actual ball game when he throws that almost interception that we were fortunate that their defensive tackle couldn't catch. And then we were somehow gifted with a non-intentional grounding penalty because the right guard apparently counts as an open receiver now. But why in the hell were we throwing the ball?
You could almost say, why was Cam in there and put Joe Webb in there
to
run the ball?
Yeah, why was Cam even in the game? Put in Derek Anderson or Joe Webb and just hand it off.
Put in Webb, he could have run.
Yeah, we could have punted on first or second down and it would have still been better than broken it. I mean, they couldn't move the ball. It didn't make any sense.
Take the victory formation at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
Jamal on God.
Yeah, everybody's on.
Oh, okay. I listened to the whole time. I just want to say something. I think BW said it maybe halfway through the show, if I ain't mistaken. I've been thinking about this game. The only way I'm convinced that we can win this game this week is we got to do something early to keep that crowd out. I think you said something earlier, BW. You definitely can't turn the ball over, but we have to do something early. You got to either create a turnover, force a turnover, or do something, take the ball all the way down the field early in the game. There's no way you're going to have a three and out or turn the ball over and let that crowd start getting like a tumbleweed.
Yeah.
That's just my thoughts. I don't know if y'all feel like that, but
the only
possible way I think we can win that game is something has to happen early to get that crowd out of that game, and you got to kind of keep it that way and don't let them have a big play at all. I mean, it's a tall task. I think it can be done, but you're going to have to play a damn near flawless game to beat them in Seattle, man.
I think you're exactly right. It's a three-step process. You come out strong, whether it's forcing a three and out, forcing a turnover, or scoring a touchdown on the opening drive. You got to shut the crowd up. They cannot get into the game. You got to treat it as if there's nobody there.
Yeah. And I don't know if y'all remember, it's the same thing. San Francisco, they still lost the game, but if y'all remember, San Fran came out last year and just had that crowd shut up. And that made them be in that game at the end. Now, they made a play at the end to win it, you know, knocking the ball out. But by them taking them out of the game early, that gave them a chance to win the game, which they ultimately didn't win. But that's just something I think we got to do. They came out strong, knocked them on the, you know, punched them in the mouth a little bit, and I just remember that crowd being quiet in that championship game. So, I mean, that's the only way, man. If it gets loud in there and they do something stupid, it's going to be a long day, man.
Yeah, we need to.
If it starts getting out of hand, maybe they can get Fuko to moon the crowd. That'll stun them.
Cam Newton's outfit.
What was that?
I said we need to win one more week so we can have another week where we can talk about, these guys can talk about what Cam Newton wears at a press conference.
Oh yeah.
We need to win one more week.
We need to criticize the shit out of Cam for dressing nice at his press conference.
Either that will happen, or the media will eviscerate him for sounding mopey after a loss in the NFC divisional round. I mean, the guy, he's not going to win no matter what.
Give me a second on this. Cam Newton has been here 4 years. 4 years. For the people that are doing this, can you really please be honest with yourself why you really don't like him? I know why you really don't like him. I know the real reason. But be honest with yourself. The stuff people are pointing out has nothing to do with on the field. I mean, we got Tom Brady running off the field cursing at a referee last year saying that's fucking bullshit. Peyton Manning called out a scoreboard operator this year. And the only thing you can talk about is all towel on his head, all these finger points. Please be real with yourself why you really don't like Cam Newton. Because it's done grown thin, and it's gotten old now. It's really old.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. And if you need verification of that, go to my Twitter feed from the night after the game. I go on and on about that because I 100% agree. It's bullshit. There's one reason why people don't like Cam Newton. Well, there's two reasons why people don't like Cam Newton. One, it's because people can't admit they were wrong. People can't say, you know, I thought he was going to be a hot pile of garbage, and he proved me wrong. He's not. People don't know how to do that. And number two is the other reason that we all know. It's the elephant in the room. If Cam Newton looked more like Tom Brady and more like Peyton Manning than he did Warren Moon or Doug Williams, there wouldn't be an issue. It's just be honest about it. And stop hiding behind code words. I can't stand code words. I mean, you know.
I think you're missing one reason, though. And I know a lot of people don't like to hear this either. When he does that little teapot with the smile on his face in front of the opposing team, and he does the Superman and all of that, it is a little over the top sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
And some people don't like it. I don't particularly like the teapot. I wish he'd lose it.
I don't like the teapot either. I'll be real about it. I think the teapot's stupid. You got a first down. Now,
why sit there
and
point with a smile on your face in front of the defense you're working against?
Granted, he only does it when he runs for a first down. He doesn't do any of this stuff when he throws. But it's the same thing, and I feel this way about defensive linemen celebrating a sack. You did your job. I mean, you know, when the mailman puts an envelope in the mailbox, he doesn't do a sack dance. I mean, you did your job.
Understand it's a game too.
That's exactly right.
Game.
It's a game.
It's a game.
Yeah, it is
it's
a game.
Game.
And then the other problem
with it. I
beat
out thousands of people to get here. I'm gonna do what I want.
It was the same game when Jim Brown went to a touchdown and handed it to the ref and said, "I'll be back again in a few minutes."
Yeah, but the other problem with it though, and it is fair to say Cam over celebrates. But so does Colin Kaepernick. So does Aaron Rodgers. So does Tom Brady. So does Ben Roethlisberger. So does Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan tells people to get the fuck off his field.
Hey, yo, hold on. Stop right there. Stop. I was thinking about something today. Have you noticed ever since he said that, they have lost us since then? The Falcons
of course.
Have not won.
Well, they won once this year.
Well, yeah, they won once. My bad.
Yeah,
they won once,
but your point still
once.
Pretty much stands.
Oh man!
But yeah, the problem is that Cam is not going to win no matter what he does. If he wears a tuxedo, he doesn't get it. He doesn't respect the game enough. If he dresses down in, gym shorts and a t-shirt, he's a thug. He doesn't care. If he wears something from his Belk clothing line, he's just out to self-promote. He doesn't care about his teammates. He only cares about himself. The only legitimate complaint I've seen about Cam was when he wore those damn capris. Because I'm sorry, if you're a man and you wear capris, you deserve everything that you get. He's getting an unfair deal.
I'm just glad he's not throwing it over everybody's damn head that much as he used to. I mean, you could tell he's working on his game. I mean, being a Panther fan, he does some stuff you just be like, eh. But
well, that's
all
what
in
you
all,
get.
I think the T-spot stuff to me, he's having fun. I was at the game Saturday. And didn't hardly nobody sit down. I mean, and when you're in that atmosphere, you kind of like to see that, man. You want to have fun. If I wanted to sit on my hands and not want to see nobody have fun, I would have just watched the shit at home, man. I mean, just have fun. I mean,
how long
you're going to play the game. He's one big-ass cracked hit from being out of the game anyway. I mean, enjoy the shit. That's the way I look about it. You got $1 million smile. Just enjoy it, man. I don't have a problem with it, but I guess a lot of people do. You don't bother me.
Well, I'm thinking, why would you want to do that in front of the defense that you just torched? You're just firing them up for the next play.
Well, here's the thing.
In my perspective.
There's a simple solution to the problem if you're the defense.
Stop him.
Don't let him get it.
Stop him.
I mean, do your job.
You don't want to see him celebrate? Stop me. You don't want to see it, stop me.
It's the same to me. It's the same thing as running up the score. There's no such thing as running up the score in the NFL. You get paid to play football. It's different if it's Pee Wee League or high school or JV or even some colleges. Like if it's Alabama against, the Citadel or North Carolina State.
You pissed off some Wolfpack, man.
Hey, look, I do the teapot whenever I turn in my test first, all right? Nobody complains about that
all
shit,
right.
So don't give me that.
But, there's no running up the score in the NFL. If you don't like it, then fucking stop it. It's that simple. It really is.
It's not that simple, though, BW. Just like, Tampa Bay, when they're at the end of the game, when they're down 30 points and they're going to run a play and hurt somebody on the last play. It's
like Arizona losing.
That's not very professional.
With 1 second to go. I mean, you're not going to win. Somebody gets hurt on that wild play at the end of the game.
I didn't understand that. I really didn't. I would
that's
have understood.
That's what I said. I don't think that's professional.
That's not really professional, but I don't understand running the multiple lateral play when it's 27-16. You can't score 13 points in one touchdown.
Right.
If it would have been 20-16, then hell yeah, go for it. It makes no sense, though. You have no shot, mathematically, you have no shot at winning a game.
Exactly.
It was entertaining, though.
Let me ask you,
Thomas Davis had 5 tackles on that play?
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this. Somebody compared Seattle when they went 7-9 in 2010. They won a playoff game, and where they're at now. Is it safe to say that the arrow is pointing up for us going forward? I feel like keep Gettleman. I mean, I didn't know what he was doing at the middle of the year. I was like, well, I didn't really question it because I was like, we're losing. But the guy, I think it's time to give him his props. It's only been 2 years, but he's been to the playoffs twice, and he's not married to none of these damn players, which I appreciate. If you're not playing, I'm not going to pay you no bunch of money. I'm not giving you no stupid 5-year contracts. Put up, shut up. I like the way he's doing things, man. And some of y'all, don't let him go, don't let him go. But it's proven to be pretty good stuff right now. I mean, you got all these young guys. We got them out the draft. You got Starr in their second year short. You got Norman finally coming around. The dude was comparing Seattle, like how they had that losing record. Now they not a dynasty, but they're a winning organization. So I kind of feel like that's where we headed, man. But I don't want to be at home. I just want somebody to correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. That's the thing.
I don't think even he thought he would have the success he's had, though, because he was trying to clean the books up.
Exactly. We're winning in spite of our situation, because he still got a little bit more work to go to clean some bad contracts out. And a lot of people are going to have to get used to the fact that one of our running backs is getting cut this offseason. It's probably going to be D'Angelo, because he's older and it's more financially sound to do it now. One of them's going to be cut. It's just the way Gettleman operates. He cut Steve Smith. So anybody who thinks he won't cut D'Angelo Williams is just being too hopeful, in my opinion.
That's $13 million for Greg Hardy comes off the books.
The Greg Hardy money comes off the books. He's probably not going to sign him long term, although if he could get him at a competitive offer, he might. We are 2 offensive linemen and a great draft class, are 2 good draft classes away from being the Seattle Seahawks of 2013 and 2014.
And that second draft class you're talking about, we'll also be able to have a little bit of money for free agency.
Exactly.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. In 2 years, we will have 2 more draft classes that, if Gettleman drafts the way he did last year, will be solid drafts. We're probably not going to get as lucky as we did this draft, because that just doesn't happen very often. Where every pick you make is a solid starter or contributor. But if you can hit on at least half of your picks in the next 2 years, we'll have money. There'll be some good players like Josh Norman's that teams aren't going to be able to afford that we can snatch up. We're going to be where Seattle is right now.
Gotcha.
Provided we keep Cam.
Gotcha. Hey, B-Dub, is Sila Tolu, is he hurt or they benched him?
He's on injured reserve.
Oh, okay.
But he probably wouldn't be playing.
But he could have played.
Yeah, he wouldn't be playing if he wasn't hurt, because the offensive line we got right now is the best offensive line we've had since we had Jordan Groves, Travell Wharton, and all those guys. I mean, this is the best offensive line we've had in a while.
Silatoli was on the 53-man roster, but he didn't even get active for the last game. He's still banged up.
Yeah.
But he's on the 53-man roster.
I hope he's never active again.
Alshon Jeffrey.
You know how I feel about him. His name could have been Alshon.
Alshon Jeffrey.
Could you imagine Alshon Jeffrey and Kelvin Benjamin on the same team? And then Philip Brown in the slot?
Along with Brad Norman on the team, I don't know what you would do with yourself, BW. Honestly, I'd be afraid to ask, man.
Speaking of Brad motherfucking Norman, how about that run he had Saturday night?
I know. I was excited. I thought he had the first down, and then I realized it was just the original line of scrimmage. It was like, damn, man.
Exactly. If it wouldn't have been 4th and 25, he would have got a first down. Because he got like 12 or 13 yards on that run. I told
y'all. He saw them big guys running after him. He could run pretty fast.
Yeah, I told y'all. Maybe one day y'all will listen to me.
You know,
well, that
sucks?
Day won't be today.
You know what sucks? I mean, you know what sucks about that play is the one right before he put him in like the half yard line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that sucked. That was the best.
I mean, that's
punt
the thing with the special teams.
Year.
It's been weird. Is we've been very good at whenever Nortman gets the punt down there. We've been pretty damn good at getting down there and then fielding or downing that ball at, like, you know, within the 5 yard line. We've been very good at that. It's just everything else in special teams is blown asshole.
Oh, an
but
underrated
that,
moment
I mean,
of that play was Mike Tolbert diving into the end zone to swat the ball back out. I didn't know
yeah.
that boy could move like that.
Well, I'll say this. I have a gut feeling somebody – Benjamin's due a good game. He's due a good game. He's been in a lull too long. And I think
– I honestly hope they just throw him an easy one on 1st and 10 to open the game and he drops it just to get it over with so he doesn't do it in the fourth quarter when it's 4th and 5 and we're down by 2 points.
Now,
and if he caught it, it'd put us in field goal range to win, you know. Just get the damn thing over with.
I think the kid's doing a good game. I think there's going to be a couple other surprises. I think I've been noticing a trend, too. If you watch the last couple games, everybody's paid attention to Charles Johnson. He's been going like a man possessed. But the guy on the other side of him has really came on. And you always see 95 in the backfield. You see number 94 beside him. Ely, that Ely kid, for the last couple games, has been right there with him, hitting the quarterback. I wouldn't be surprised if that guy goes game. He's on the verge of really showing why they, you know, why he was drafted.
Yeah, this whole win streak, he's played much better. He it's like a light turned on.
Yeah.
Who do you think, with all these head coach interviews, you think Sean McDermott's going to get a call again?
Yep. As soon as we lose and are eliminated from the playoffs or win the Super Bowl, whenever he can be available, he's going to get phone calls.
I thought so.
Because we went from the mid-20s on defense at the beginning of the year to finished in the top 10. And general managers and owners who hire coaches look at those kind of things. It matters to them. It doesn't matter to fans so much. And I know I don't know if he's still on the line or not, but I know Nur isn't a big fan of Sean McDermott.
No,
and probably hopes that he gets a job somewhere else. but teams look at those kind of things, and they hire people based on that kind of information. It's not to say that he'll get a job, but he'll get a couple of interviews.
I thought so. Good for Sean if he does.
I'd prefer for Mike Shula to get a job somewhere.
What, at an airport?
Who are you going to bring in?
The Panthers offense.
Who am I going to bring in?
Yeah,
If he doesn't get hired elsewhere, I'd bring in Mark Trestman to be the offensive coordinator. Just for the fact that he's a quarterback guy.
Is Gus Bradley going to be available now that Harbaugh's gone?
He might. But, I mean, the ideal situation would be to hire Gus Malzahn, but I don't think he would leave Auburn to be the offensive coordinator in the NFL. I mean, if he's going to go to the NFL, he's going to be a head coach.
Did you see all the people that have been turning down the Jets? How do they feel, man? Everybody's saying no to that situation. No
because
thanks.
It's the
no
worst
thanks.
Situation in the NFL. Rex Ryan couldn't even win there. Rex Ryan is a damn good coach. I mean, he took Mark Sanchez to the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row. And then, I mean, their owner just fucked them over. It's just the GM was terrible. The owner is terrible. I mean, if Rex Ryan can't win with you, then it's not Rex Ryan's fault.
Oh, my God.
I saw somewhere where the Bills coach that just left was going to go there, but
it's
possible. He
quit because, from what I understand, he wasn't getting along with the general manager, and he was very angry that they traded a draft pick to get Sammy Watkins. And it turns out he was kind of right because they could have just drafted Odell Beckham if they would have stayed put.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Odell Beckham may not have worked out as well for Buffalo as he did for New York because Buffalo needs quarterback, but, you know, they could have. I would rather have Odell Beckham and my next year's first-round draft pick than Sammy Watkins.
Absolutely.
If I'm a team that's rebuilding.
Yeah. Definitely.
Didn't they finish 9-7 this year? Yeah,
they did. They finished 9-7. Yeah, because some of their fans were butthurt with me on Twitter when I was tweeting for the CSR account on Saturday. And I tweeted, it's playoff time, and a bunch of Bills fans were like, Buffalo went 9-7, and they're not in the playoffs. You know, well, what the fuck's that got to do with me? I mean, number one, even if you wanted to be pissed, you can't be because you're in the AFC. You wouldn't have made the playoffs anyway. It had nothing to do with you. Now, if Eagles fans want to be shitting about it, that's fine because they would have taken our spot. But you can't bitch about the NFC when you didn't make the AFC playoffs.
Damn it.
Although I will give them credit because one of them did call the NFC South a four-way cripple fight, and I thought that was pretty funny. Because it was true, you know.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
No, at least we came out of the rocking chair on top there. That's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it'll be fun next year when Bucks have a quarterback, maybe.
I don't think they're going to.
Jameis Winston?
Jameis might go back to school.
I hope he doesn't because I want to see Tampa Bay fail for another 5 years with that.
There was a story today that he's seriously considering staying in school.
You know,
and of course,
Jameis
would be the moron to stay in school when he's going to be a top five pick. But
he is a moron. I wouldn't expect any less from him.
Well, I heard a talk about this today, and they said he would actually be better off maturity wise by going to the NFL rather than being another year as a star in Tallahassee at the party school.
Exactly. The last thing he needs is to be in college for another year. He's already an immature child.
But look at Johnny Manziel, though. The guy is a total train wreck, and he's been in the NFL for a year, and nothing's helped him. And he's in one of the most depressing cities in the entire fucking planet, in Cleveland, fucking Ohio, and he's still screwing up. I mean,
he's
I can't
got
imagine
money. He grew up with money.
He's
going to always be a screw up.
Yeah, he grew up a rich kid. He didn't have a chance.
I don't see Winston changing any. I mean, the guy's just he's too much of a damn loose cannon to me. And if he gets into the wrong people in the NFL.
I'll tell you the best way to describe Jameis Winston, and Panthers fans will understand it more than anybody. Jameis Winston is what everybody else thinks Cam is.
I can understand that. I can definitely understand that. But Cam Newton, I mean, for anyone to make that comparison, to make it and actually be serious about it, is fucking stupid.
Yeah, it is.
Cam
stupid,
hasn't done.
But, yeah,
you know,
but
yeah, but I, yeah.
That's what everybody else thinks Cam Newton is. But
yeah,
Jameis
exactly.
Winston is that person.
He stole a laptop 8 years ago.
And that's not even said right. He bought a stolen property. It's not like he went up in somebody's place.
Yeah, that's another thing. He didn't steal a laptop. He bought stolen property.
Right, but that's what they try to do. That's the whole point of me saying it. I'm being sarcastic because everybody, they're trying to find anything on the dude. You really don't have anything.
And I kind of love it, man. Keep talking, because that's really what motivates Cam, too. All that hate, it's definitely motivating. And maybe his ball will keep getting more accurate the more and more they hate on him.
Yeah, it's just like what they hated the most about Cam's car accident was they discovered that, A, he wasn't at fault, B, he was driving safely, C, he was buckled up, D, he wasn't driving some flashy sports car. I mean, they can't stand when they get provided with facts that go against their narrative.
Exactly.
No, the biggest error that Cam made, I believe, was when he said that entertainer and icon thing during
combine. Right.
That was stupid.
If he never would have said that, he probably wouldn't get half the shit he does.
Exactly.
But, you know, at least he was honest. At least he didn't do some stupid postcard answer like most of them do. I kind of appreciated his honesty. I wish he wouldn't have been as honest. I mean, he probably could have been better saying, I'm going to be the best quarterback to ever play the game or something, you know, something like that.
And it would have been over.
It would have been over.
Think about it, B-Dub. If you Cam Newton, just put yourself in his shoes. What, was he 20 years old when he said it?
Yeah.
20 years old, you're about to be the number one pick in the draft. I mean, I could kind of understand why he would say it. I mean, you 6'5", 250. I mean, he probably was feeling himself. When I was 20, I had a lot more confidence than I do now.
Well, we're not saying that he was, you know, it's not something he could feel. Just don't say it.
Yeah, just don't say it.
I think he learned a big lesson from that, though, because he hadn't said it again. So.
Or at least wait until you've won something before you do say it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that whole situation, though, taught Cam a lot as far as dealing with the media. And he's gotten a lot better than he first started out, for sure. But you could just tell how he deals with guys like Gant and those guys compared to how he dealt with Ray Lewis and Steve and Dilfer and Steve Young and those guys, you know, how he deals with the guys with the old players that are now media. He's more loose with those guys, but he kind of watches what he says around people who are reporters and have never played the game.
Yeah, well, one thing about that now that you brought that up, that's pissing the hell out of me off. When people are saying, look how he shakes the white man's hand versus Ray Lewis. Okay, when you are a middle-aged white man, I'm a middle-aged white man. I'm 34 years old. I'm white. I'm sure you couldn't tell that by my accent. But I'm 34 years old, and I'm white. When I extend my hand out for a handshake to a black kid or a white kid, it doesn't even really matter, I'm going to get a handshake. I don't have street cred. I'm not cool like that. I don't dap. I'm not that kind of person. It's not my style. I'm too old for that shit, basically. When you extend your hand out to somebody like Cam, he's going to shake your hand. He was raised that way. Ray Lewis didn't stick his hand out to be shook. Ray Lewis stuck his hand out to do what they did. It's that simple. The other three didn't do that. The other three stuck their hand out just like a business casual handshake. Ray Lewis didn't. What's the problem? But because it's Cam, you know, oh, he's showboating. Oh, look how he does this. Oh, look how he ignores them. You know, shut the fuck up. You know, it's I mean,
tell us how you Cam really
deserve
feel,
the contract, y'all. Is it time to pay him? Does he deserve the big bucks or what?
He's going to get paid. It's just a matter of, is Dave Gettleman going to write the check or is somebody else? I mean, he's going to get paid. Honestly, the best contract to give Cam is the same one that Colin Kaepernick and Andy Dalton got.
He'll never take it.
He'll never take it.
Yeah, that's what they said. They said he didn't like that. They saying that his agent was saying that's garbage deal.
But that's the best deal to offer him. Make it more money if you have to sweeten it. But it's if you turn out and end up playing like shit, we're not financially crippled. But if you reach your full potential like we thought you would do when we drafted you, you will never have to lift another finger after you retire.
Right.
It's a win-win for both sides. Give him more guaranteed money.
No contract, kind of like a pay as you perform, right?
Yeah, it's a base salary of like $2 million, and then everything else is incentive.
Oof.
Build
camps, all I'm going to say is
build camps where the incentives are running, you know, rushing related too. Like if he gets 500 yards and 5 touchdowns running, you know, he gets so many million dollars. It doesn't have to be the exact same contract, but just the same blueprint.
Gotcha.
All I'm going to say about that is thank you, Joe Flacco.
What about Flacco?
No, him and that stupid, ridiculous contract that he got that he's absolutely not worth, and any sane planet in the galaxy would not pay Joe Flacco the amount of money that he got paid.
Yeah, but he
had
just won. He just won a Super Bowl, and you kind of have
yeah.
to do
well,
it.
Yeah, won in air quotes.
The
yeah.
stars are lined up. The stars are lined for his deal, for real, man. He had the perfect storm for a contract.
Yeah,
contract
year,
they,
and he went out and won the damn Super Bowl MVP. They had to pay him.
Yeah, the Ravens GM isn't
too
easy to deal with. So,
Joe Flacco's the reason they even made it as far as they did, much less win the Super Bowl, because he turned into Peyton Manning in the playoffs. I mean, he was garbage in the regular season, but he was the damn league MVP in the playoffs.
He hadn't threw a pick his last couple of, you know, that Super Bowl run, and now this, he's like 13 touchdowns, no picks.
Yeah, so you had to pay him.
Can anybody else on our roster catch punts?
No.
Nobody, just to even secure it. I don't even need them to run. Just don't drop it.
Well, Jericho Cotchery can. He did it earlier in his career. Benae Benwickery and Josh Norman are the two backups. But
believe it or not, Roman Harper used to do it.
Really? I didn't know that. Huh.
Yep.
But I don't want a starting member of the secondary returning punts. Backup that's probably not going to play any other snaps. I tell you who I would like to see do it. I would like to see Fozzie Whitaker get a shot at it because he's the kick returner.
Right.
And he's shifty. And I would like to see Colin Jones get a shot at it because he's quick. But other than that, I mean, it's Burson or Philly Brown. And we don't want Philly Brown doing it because we saw how much of a disaster that was.
Yeah, I'd rather have Burton.
I'm telling y'all, I was at that game Saturday, and every time that ball went in the air, like you said, B-Dub, that punter, in his defense, that punter sucked. But I'm telling you, when that ball went in the air, man, everybody was like, up coming out.
Yeah, well,
oh
I was too.
God,
watching
you
the
could cut
house,
the tension.
Man.
You could
Same
cut the fog
mark.
In the air in the stadium.
You could hear it on TV. I mean, it got quiet when the ball was kicked. You could hear it on TV.
This guy, it was so bad. This guy turned around and was like, come on, man. Don't jinx it. Be optimistic. I say, man, I'm going to try to be cautiously optimistic, but this guy is scaring the living shit out of me right now. I mean, because that's the only way they could have won the game, and he about gave them the damn game, man. I know one thing. You better not do that shit Saturday night.
I know the excuse for him on that botched punt is that, you know, oh, well, you know, the punter was so awful that he, you know, wasn't really sure what he was going to have. I still don't understand what in God's name he was doing, even getting anywhere near that damn punt. I mean, can anyone explain to me what the hell Brenton Burson was fucking thinking when he's like, oh, well, I know it's a good idea. Let me get on one knee and propose the fucking
knew he was
ball
getting a
as it's coming down.
Somebody.
Right down in front of me.
I think he forgot his duties, man.
Somebody interviewed from the team about it and said that basically what happened was he didn't expect it to be as shitty of a punt as it was. It kind of snuck up on him. And at that point he didn't have anywhere to go. And he just figured, fuck it, I'm going to try and jump on it. And he couldn't do it. And the ball bounced funny. It looked like it was going to bounce one way and it bounced the other way. And that's when it hit him in the leg. And then they recovered it. That his thinking wasn't terrible. It's just that the ball took a funny bounce on him. But I
was just maintaining the Panthers' tradition. When you think about, they've got A.E. and Kenyon Barner and Joe Adams, and you know, on and on and on. I'm hoping this year they bring in the kid from Utah, Kalen Clay. That's who they need. They can get him as an undrafted free agent or a comp pick in the seventh round, and that'll put an end to that.
Yeah.
You think he'll come right in and be ready, man? I say do somebody that's a seasoned veteran back there and bring along a guy like that.
Kalen Clay is one of the top returners in college football. He's had like three or four run back for a touchdown this year.
Wasn't Joe Adams? Wasn't Adams the same way?
Joe Adams fumbled a ball in Arkansas. I wrote an article back before that draft saying I didn't want Adams. I wanted the kid out of Tulsa because he had better hands, and he ended up playing for Philly as an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
Is he still playing?
Yeah, he went down to Jacksonville, I think. But
I tell you who we really should sign. It would break CSR, but Armani Edwards is available, and he could at least fair catch it. I mean, he's not going to get any return yards, but damn it, we just need somebody to catch it. I mean, I don't care about returning it. We just need to not fumble it.
Isn't he coaching for App State now or something like that?
Probably.
I have a suggestion. Since he got limited snaps last week, they choose to give him a jersey, I'd put D'Angelo Williams back there returning punts.
I would, but I don't know if I would trust his hand because he's got that broken hand. That would be my only reservation.
Right.
But other than that, yeah, I mean, why the hell not? I mean, he needs to contribute somehow. Shit, put Kostry back there. Put anybody.
Except Benjamin.
Except Benjamin.
See, I would ask.
Can you imagine Benjamin if he were on?
Well, I would ask Jackson if he were on, but I'm curious. Did Stephen Hill ever return punts?
No,
I know he's been
been
in practice. Well, yeah, but I mean that's really all we really want at this point is just someone who can just catch the damn thing and not fumble it to eternity.
I tell you who we should put back there. We should put Brandon Williams back there. Could you imagine lining up to punt and see his ass
big
come out
swole.
There to return a big swole? Could you imagine that shit? Punter probably wouldn't even kick it. He'd probably try and just throw it just to, fuck this. I'm not letting him return this damn thing.
Well, in that vein, then we really are missing Hardy because Hardy used to do it at practice. He was returning punts.
That's true.
He used to be a gunner on special teams.
Damn, so did.
I think we should do a throwback Thursday and sign Armand Smith.
So we can release him on Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I just want to see Charles Johnson give him the stink eye again. That's just what I want to see. I will never forget that. That was one of the greatest things I'd ever seen.
So anybody want to predict the score?
Guys, I'm going to shut it down. I got to head to bed.
Okay.
Appreciate everybody calling in, man.
No score prediction for you.
No score prediction for me.
Score?
I'm going to say 14-10 Seattle.
14-10 Seattle. Mm.
You get to 20, you win.
Yeah, that's true. If somebody gets to 20, they're going to win.
24 to
13. I'm thinking it's going to be, yeah, I'm thinking 24 to 13. That's what I'm thinking for Seattle.
All right. Y'all have a good night.
You too.
Night.
All right. You too, guys. Take it easy.